From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 31st day of March 2022. It's USDA Report Day. The grain stocks and prospective plantings reports were released at 11 a.m. Central Time, and they held some really interesting numbers. We'll talk about those today during our program, along with checking out what happened in Chicago. Matt Bennett will help us do that. He's with agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. And Mike Tenura will be here too, from T-Storm Weather, to discuss the forecast for the Northern Hemisphere and the Southern Hemisphere, all on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Now, on that note of checking out our website, you can find those numbers from this morning, the grain stocks and the prospective plantings report figures. I also recorded one of the very first live YouTube briefings that USDA NASS has done with the Secretary of Agriculture, Tom Vilsack, and that happened earlier today. I pulled some comments as it relates to today's prospective plantings report. Here's how those numbers for soybeans, which were really big, came out from the United States Department of Agriculture today, from Lance Honig. He's the chief of the crops branch at USDA.
Next, let's shift gears and look at soybeans. Based on, again, the survey work that we did, we're expecting 91 million acres of soybeans to be planted this year. That's up 4.3% or 3.76 million acres from what was planted last year. And so you can just see where the acres mostly went that we took out of corn. We just shifted them over to soybeans here. A lot of switching happening there, of course, based on some of the high nitrogen prices pushing to more farmers toward soybeans than corn. I would point out that this would represent the third time in history that we have planted more soybeans than corn in the U.S. should these intentions be realized.
Again, the USDA NASS soybean planted acreage intentions, that's a survey of farmers, some 75,000 across the nation, was for 91 million acres. That was released earlier today. That's up 4% from last year, and compared with last year, planted acreage for soybeans is up or unchanged in 24 of the 29 estimating states. Corn planted area for all purposes in 2022, according to USDA, now estimated at less than 90 million acres, 89.5 million was the number, and that's down 4% or 3.87 million acres from last year. Compared to last year, planted acreage is expected to be lower or unchanged in 43 of the 48 estimating states. Now, as related to the soybeans in that 91 million acre record size crop, again, only the third time U.S. farmers have ever predicted they would plant more soybean acres than they would corn. It is also a new planted acreage record high for soybeans, says Lance Honig. Again, he's the chief of the crops branch at USDA NASS. Here he is from this morning's briefing to the secretary.
And again, just to put a little perspective around it here, you can see I didn't mention on the previous slide, but the 91 million acres does represent a new record high soybean planted acreage here in the U.S. Taking a quick look at those soybean acreage numbers by state and how they compare with last year, obviously, just the opposite of what you saw with corn. Instead of mostly red-colored states, you see mostly blue. Increases across most of the growing area. Here you see a lot of pound signs, a lot of record high acreage is expected this year. Illinois, Kentucky, Michigan, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, South Dakota, and Wisconsin all intending to plant record high soybean acreage this season.
Again, today's prospective plantings report predicting 91 million acres of soybeans will be sown this spring by farmers and 89.5 million acres of corn. That combined number is down just slightly from the combined acreage from last year, although the split is entirely different. Now, here are the numbers as they settled in Chicago. Corn futures in the May contract at 7.48¾, up 10¾. July 7.33, 13 higher. And new crop December up 27¾¢, nearly three times what the May contract was up at $6.83¾. May soybeans down 45¾ at $16.18¼. July $15.98, 44½ higher. And new crop November there up 49¾. quarters at $14.20.5. The bean meal, $5.60 higher at $4.67.15. And the bean oil at $69.94. And the May contract down $2.28. I said higher for the bean meal. Of course, it was lower. Wheat futures down 21 cents for the May at $10.06. The July at $10.02, down 21. Those both for the soft red. And the hard red at $10.29.75, down 14.75 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the afternoon 87.5 cents lower. Feeders were down 235 and hogs were off $3.60. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us in Windsor, Illinois. Hi, Matt. Thank you for being with us today. What an interesting report it was this morning. I know the soybean number was a surprise to everybody. How did you see it?
Well, you know, there's no question that these numbers were a surprise. As you know, we've said all along, we felt like corn and bean acres would be much, much closer than what we had seen. We still thought corn was going to win out. So, I mean, I can't sit here and say I thought bean acres were going to be more than corn. I just was not at all surprised by big bean acres, I will tell you that. Now, 91, that would be an all-time record. Yeah, you could say it's a little bit surprising, but I wasn't surprised that we got over 90. Our actual estimate was 89.8, so we were pretty darn close to 90 to begin with. Now, we came in on corn, you know, we were at 90.7, and so we're actually a million acres in change, you know, 1.2 above where USDA came in, but there's no doubt that bean acres being more than corn acres was a shock to the system for the trade. And yeah, heck, you know, Farm Futures had a survey that showed that that was going to be the case. So I think a lot of people looked at that and said, oh, there's no way that can happen. But there's no question. The initial reaction from the trade, I think, definitely was well served, being very friendly to the corn market, and then quite negative towards beans.
Well, and the other thing I was thinking about when I'm looking at the closes for the afternoon, it surprises me that the market is not as reactive as maybe you would have thought, because you would have thought there'd be a limit down move in soybeans at least.
Yeah, you would think so. You know, it's interesting to see with a 91 million that that you didn't see that sort of a trade. But corn was so friendly that I think there was a time there, especially between, maybe 11 and 12 o'clock, when you're trying to figure out, well, which one's going to win the tug of war here? You know, is corn going to try to keep beans from falling out of bed, or is beans going to try to pull corn off the limit moves, which is, you know, essentially what we saw happen. And so, you know, it's interesting to kind of see how that all manifested itself. But you got to keep in mind, there's still so much unrest and people trying to figure out just what's going to happen, for instance, with this sunflower crop in Ukraine. You know, if you don't end up getting that thing planted, at least a large chunk of it, then world vegetable prices are still going to be susceptible, you know, to some sort of strengthen the market, or at least a really strong underpinning. Yeah, we know Brazil didn't have a great crop, but moving forward, we also know that their deforestation process has been on overload, overdrive, if you will. They're going to come at us with a ton of acres this next year. And so this thing can all turn fairly quickly. But yes, there's a lot of, question marks as to what world vegetable oil levels will look like as far as production is concerned.
You know, on occasion, and usually it's the Indonesian palm oil about August time that gets into the marketplace and ruffles soybean, especially as we're wrapping up the season here and maybe have a good crop and can't figure out why things are moving higher. Normally that would be the case. How long do you think it will take the trade to assess what's been happening in Ukraine as it's related to sunseed, sunflowers in particular, I suppose, and the impact it could have on the veggie oil market?
Well, essentially, we're going to need to get fairly far into the springtime period. Now, the start of spring planting, if you will, has gone rather well. Fuel hasn't been near the issue that they had said it would be, but that was also making the assumption that you were going to have war throughout the entirety of the spring planting season. And at this stage of the game, it still looks like that could be the case. And so, yeah, they may have enough fuel to get going at the start, but it's just like most of us around here. You know, you may have the tank full, but when the tank's empty, if you don't have someone to come back and fill it up, then we've got some issues. And so I think that you'll have to get farther out, probably, towards the middle of May timeframe, maybe even June 1, before you start to understand, hey, how much are they not going to get planted? Because if it's a significant amount, then it could definitely be very price reactive for this soybean market. It's certainly going to impact the corn market as well, especially whenever you get a number like we got today, which suggests that we're not going to be able to alleviate, you know, some of the lack of corn hitting the market out of the Black Sea region.
It means that the safrinha crop coming out of South America is of utmost importance, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, not just that. I mean, when you start looking, yes, you're right on that, first of all. But when you start looking, for instance, you plug in 89.5 to the balance sheet, use the 1.44 the current USDA is currently at, which I think could still come down. But whenever I use that with demand figures that most people are using, I'll tell you what, Todd, you need 178 bushel yield just to stay above a billion bushels on carryout. And so when, if you're only going to plant 89.5, and I'm not saying that's what, but that's what we're trading. That's what we're going to trade until we get closer or farther through spring time frame. You get to the June planted acreage number, and then you'll get more clarity. But I'll tell you what, 178 bushels just to stay above a billion, that tells you that we've got an enormous amount of pressure to have really good weather and a really good crop coming out of the U.S. here this year. If not, then you could certainly see world corn values just absolutely skyrocket.
So soybeans were in the driver's seat, leading the market as we went through late 2021 into early 2022. Wheat took that driver's seat over as the Ukraine-Russia conflict became a war. And now, is corn in the lead, or did we find something from wheat today that will keep it in the driver's seat? And what does that mean?
Now, I've got to think, though, that corn is in the lead. You know, whenever we look at wheat, we were kind of expecting wheat acres might be a little bit more than what we saw. You know, essentially they came in here with this estimate at 47.35, which is, a shade under a million bushels more than last year. And so, you know, your outlook for them was saying they thought we'd have 48 million acres. We thought we might even see a few more than that. I believe we were at 48.2 maybe. But regardless, you've got more wheat acres. Stocks are definitely an issue. Stocks to use are definitely an issue, whether you're talking U.S. or world, because we're running so much tighter than what we have. But that's a trend that we all kind of understood was going to be the case. So if we're saying, hey, who's driving this boat right now? I've got to think it's corn market. I'm not saying everyone's going to follow along with corn, but I'm not so sure that corn says, you know what, I don't care if you follow along or not. For the time period, we're going to need to at least make our good old college try to get a hold of some corn acres here moving forward. And so I got to think that December corn will be well supported, even if you see weakness in the bean market. I've got to think that there's going to be those out there that are going to be trying to really encourage the producer to step in and be willing to pay, you know, $1,650 or $1,700 for anhydrous, and be willing, you know, to take some of the risk that it might be. We obviously know there's a ton of risk on the table to planting corn this year if you wouldn't end up having a great crop, but there could be one heck of a reward as well.
Any risks that there will be demand destruction? And I'm thinking about yesterday's hogs and pigs report.
Well, there's no doubt that hogs and pigs report, it was friendly to hogs and pigs. It wasn't friendly to cattle. The cattle on feed report last week actually tells you that we're still feeding a heck of a lot of cattle. And so one thing that you got to understand, though, Todd, when you look at this quarterly stocks report, you know, you come in at it was 7.85 billion bushels here. The average of the trade guess was above that for corn. Last year, we were right at 7.7. And so you've only got 150 million more bushels of corn this year. You know, and gee whiz, Todd, we just raised a billion bushel bigger crop than what we did in 2020. And so to only have halfway through the marketing year an extra 150 million bushels sitting around, to me, is certainly something that's telling you, hey, demand has been good. Disappearance has been good. You look over at soybeans, and actually we came in with a few more beans than what the trade was expecting, even though it wasn't a substantial amount. Just psychologically, I don't think that it helped the bean market out at all today. So again, you're looking at two totally different tales as far as corn and beans go whenever it comes to stocks.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
That is Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. If you'd like to delve into the USDA grain stocks and prospective plantings reports in greater detail and get an idea what the implications might be going forward for at least 3 months, these normally set the tone for that second quarter of the year. As it relates to the price of corn and soybeans, why don't you check out the FarmDoc Daily website and look under webinars in the archive for today's FarmDoc Daily webinar with Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin. I hosted that during the 2 o'clock hour today. So if you're listening live on the radio during that time, I'm doing double duty, but not live here, live at the webinar. And you can see it in its archive form. It'll be up soon enough, usually by the end of the afternoon, at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, or look up youtube.com/farmdocvideo, or just come to willag.org. Eventually, I'll put the webinar up there as well. This is the University of Illinois agricultural economist talking about today's USDA grain stocks and prospective plantings report. I'll be hosting that program with Joe Jansen and Scott Irwin, and would sure love to have you take a look at it as well. On this Thursday afternoon, let's check in with Mike Tenera. He's at tstorm.net. That's T-Storm weather. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today.
Great being here, Todd. Thanks for having me.
In the Midwest, we've had wetter weather, cooler weather. I'm wondering whether that will continue. It feels like it's something that may be persistent over time.
Well, we do have a number of systems that linger off to the west, so we don't think that this was a one-off deal. We'll see more rains next week and more than likely the following week as well. There's a pretty strong system that's lining up for early next week that'll move across the plains on Monday and Tuesday, and then across the Corn Belt and Mid-South on Tuesday and Wednesday. And we're looking for similar totals to what we just saw over the last 24 hours. So if we look at that from the 1 or 2 week perspective, you'll easily conclude that it's going to end up being pretty wet, because we just saw 1 to 2 inches of rain, and now we're looking at similar amounts coming up in about 5 days. And once we get beyond them, there are more systems off to the west. And even though there will be a bit of a break after this rain next week, we don't think we're going to totally dry out. We think we're going to see more systems coming through. And while it might not be record types of rains or anything like that, it'll be just enough to keep things soggy, because we like to see that warm and dry weather at this time of the year. And unfortunately, it looks a little bit cooler than normal, and it looks a little bit stormier than normal, too.
What do you think about conditions for the winter wheat crop in Kansas, Colorado, parts of Nebraska, Oklahoma, Texas?
Well, the rain chances are pretty low when you get into Oklahoma and Texas. They'll see some decent rains in the central and eastern parts of those states, but most of the wheat is grown off in the west. In those western areas, the big problem is that these systems that are going to move through come through relatively quickly, and the way you generate a lot of rain in the western plains is to have a system move through nice and slowly, because that causes winds to turn in from the south and the southeast. That pulls a lot of muggy air further to the west. And then when the system finally arrives, it interacts with all that humidity and generates lots of rain. But in the situation that's coming up, it's more than likely for these systems to move through rather quickly, and that'll prevent that nice feed of southerly winds from feeding into that region. And because of that, we just think there's not going to be a whole lot of rain. And the thing you need to keep in mind about what's happening in Oklahoma and Texas is that 81% of the wheat crop in Texas was rated poor and very poor on Sunday. And it's not a whole lot better in Oklahoma, where 51% of the crop was rated similarly. So we just need a lot of rain. We need it very quickly. And unless one of these systems coming up makes a dramatic change, they're probably going to head right into the middle of April with this drought.
Just a quick reminder, and Lance Honig, who is the chief of the crops branch at USDA, told us this during the prospective plantings briefing after the report this morning, that the first crop progress report that will include corn and soybeans, these already include wheat, will be up for Monday of this coming week. So we'll watch for that. I want to stay in the Northern Hemisphere with you, Mike, but turn to Europe. Through Ukraine. They're, of course, are on the same planting season as we are. What are conditions like there today?
Well, it's been pretty dry from France through Ukraine over the last 2 to 3 months, and we would have some concern about this if the weather pattern weren't turning a lot wetter. They were real dry for most of the month, And now we're getting into April, and temperatures are cooling off a lot, very cool across that region into next week and especially the following week. So it's going to be cool there for basically the next 10 to 12 days. But along with that cooler weather, we'll see the main storm track line up right across France and then flow right through Ukraine. So because of that, all of these areas that we would be concerned about for dryness or even a drought are going to see some nice rains, and that's going to take away some of this potential for the corn or wheat crop to have some problems coming up in the near term. The only thing that you might need to consider is that corn will need to be planted at some point in April and May, so getting a lot of rain at the start of April isn't ideal, but they do plant a little bit later than we do here because of their cooler climate. So still a lot of time for things to improve. But basically, the dryness story that we've been a little bit concerned about is more than likely going to come to an end through mid-month.
Well, if the tractors can't run, maybe the tanks can't run either. I shouldn't make that comment, but I'm going to anyway. In the southern hemisphere, what do we know about the corn crop in Brazil? That's the second or safrinha crop.
Well, we have a lot of proprietary data that we collect, and no matter how you look at it, you come to the conclusion that they're basically having their wettest growing season since 2019 for second crop corn. So this is a lot different than what we were dealing with for soybeans, where it was really dry and we obviously had one of the worst growing seasons on record. So going forward, it's going to stay pretty wet in those southern growing areas of Paraná, and that includes about one-third of the crop in Brazil. As you go off to the north, the dry season is approaching. It starts to get going over the last third of April, and we're going to see it start a little bit early from the way it looks right now, just because it is going to dry out a little bit over the next couple of weeks. But they've had a lot of rain to this point in time, and we just don't have a lot of concern because we think there was enough rain to at least push them through. Because keep in mind, unlike last year when the crop was planted really late and an early start to the dry season was a big deal, this year the crop was planted on time, maybe a little bit early, and seeing dryness now, while not ideal, is certainly going to help things out. And keep this in mind too, Todd. If you look at the numbers that the USDA is using for their production number for Brazil, they're using a corn yield that's pretty far below the trend, not only from the drought that hit the first crop, but also they're accounting for some problems with the second crop. At this point in time, we think it's going to be pretty difficult to have a really bad corn crop for the second one, just because they've been getting some pretty good rain. So there is some significant potential for that number to come up with the USDA in the future, but we'll just wait and see and kind of have to wait and hear some ground reports over the next few weeks.
Thank you very much, and we'll talk with you again soon, Mike.
Yeah, that sounds great, Todd.
Mike Tenor is with tstorm.net. That's T-Storm Weather. Joins us each and every Thursday here on the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media.